on this week's show.
We talk about a shit Doctor Who trailer.
Kiss my sweaty balls, you fat fuck.
It was really shit.
I can finally talk to Keith about The Expanse. Woohoo!
Yay!
Just get to the fucking point.
And I've got someone to talk to about Jurassic Pork.
Stay tuned.
Fucking put your wang away. And Keith, next time you come into the studio in blackface, you're fired.
See if he'd ask you to fucking black up, or to give him your PIN number, or to shit yourself. Would you have done that as well?
I would have blacked up, because it was radio, nobody would have known.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gamers, geezers, geeks, dinosaurs, time-travelling people.
Butt monkeys.
Butt monkeys. It's this week's Monkey Nut Punch podcast. And how can I put it? We've put on 500 pounds. We've got Keith.
Yeah.
He's our guest this week.
I'm not a guest. I'm back.
Might as well be a fucking guest. We've been
holding
the fort since you... You vanished into obscurity just because you were on Britain's Got Talent, you know. I can't wait until that comes out. Hearing you sing Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On. It's going to be classic. We've got Nigel, who's always with me on his podcasting journey. Say hello, Nigel.
Hello, Nigel.
How are we diddling?
Yeah, all right. It's hot.
It's fucking melting.
These two are bitching because it's 30 degrees in England.
Yeah. The 30 degrees in England is oven... chip temperature.
This is daily temperature at home. It's hotter than this.
In a country that doesn't believe in air conditioning, this is terrible.
No, that this is true.
So, we're going to be talking about the Doctor Who trailer that dropped as Keith was driving over to my house.
Yep.
We've all seen it. I think I can explain my problem with it very easily, but I'll save that for the end of the discussion. Nigel's seen it. So the first thing is a tease trailer, to try and whet your appetite. And we were told that we'd see Jodie Whittaker in action as the Doctor. We didn't see Jodie Whittaker in action as the Doctor. We just saw something. Let me describe the commercial.
She smiled at the camera. That was Jodie Whittaker in action.
This is where worrying about the female Doctor is maybe the least of our fucking problems. And it may be Chris Chibnall, maybe our issues.
Here's the thing, right? The BBC are doing their level fucking best to close down this leak. If you're on any of the sort of like 4chan and a few of the other boards, have still got links to this. That footage is a way, way better trailer than that piece of shit.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just infinitely better. It's a 30-second clip of her in a train, and she's the Doctor. And I'm sold on the fact that she can do the Doctor. She's the Doctor, and you could see it.
I reserve judgment.
No, you watch the clip. Anybody out there, watch the clip. She's brilliant. In that 30 seconds was more of Jodie Whittaker and going, okay, I'll watch it for that clip. That trailer, had I seen that trailer alone, nah. No, I'll be like, well, yeah, I might tune in.
Yeah.
That trailer didn't get me excited. It didn't get me enthusiastic about it. It was shit.
Now, I made a joke about seeing the Doctor in action, but there was a press release saying that you get to see the Doctor finally in action on Sunday, to which I read a comment on the YouTube video, which you're not supposed to do. And it said, if that's the Doctor in action, then Series 11 is going to be as dull as shit. And I can believe that. Don't worry about there being a female Doctor. Worry about fucking Chris Chibnall, the writer of Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, 42, and I can't remember the other one because it was that exciting.
But here, the rumor is, right, and I think there was one clue in that trailer, where you see the, I don't know if it was, but the flashy shit all around all three of those companions, because there's three companions, because they're multicultural, even though they forgot probably one of the largest cultures on this planet, which the BBC always do.
What, Chinese?
Well, Asian, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's responsible for quite a significant amount of people on this earth, yet, you know, the BBC are being multicultural, but we never, ever see an Asian face.
You know why? Because in the scale of the oppression Olympics, Chinese people finish above white people because they do really well in Western culture.
Mm. But they're not featured on TV. Yeah. It's just an interesting point. In terms of the BBC to be multicultural, they missed out. But, you know, not that I'm fucked about it because I think it's all bollocks, but... It's you know, we've got the Asian person, we've got the black person, we've got the white person. Where's the freaking Asian?
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're
an East Asian.
If you're going to do something, then do it fucking right. Yes. And don't do diversity incorrectly.
Well, exactly.
If you're going to force it down our throats, you're going to do it fucking right. Yeah. If you're going to drown me in a bucket of water, I want it done right. I'm not a puddle.
Well,
don't give me a fucking puddle. I want a full bone bucket. I want chunks of ice in that while you're at it, just to, you know, put a flourish on it.
Yeah.
I get you because they are a little blind to the to that group.
But going back to what I was saying is you got those flashes of light. There has been more than one comment that it's going to be a continuous story throughout,
which is fine.
Which
it has to be a decent story, though.
Broadchurch, love it or loathe it. Series 1 and 3 were quite good and kept you suitably sort of hooked to it week on week. If he writes it like Broadchurch, it could be good. If he writes it like every other fucking Doctor Who episode he's ever written, yeah, not going to be so good.
And the first series of Torchwood.
Yeah, not so good.
Yeah.
But if he writes it like Broadchurch and produces it like Broadchurch, it could work.
Do you know they got rid of the music composer on it?
Yes. No, Murray Gold left.
Did he?
Yes.
No, he didn't leave.
Apparently he had enough.
He was probably pushed out.
I don't think he was. I think he had done it for 10 years. And I think he said he wanted to go on to different projects.
Hold on a second.
There's only so many ways you can do the Doctor Who theme and then get bored of it.
Hold on. Right. Have you seen the new composer?
Okay, so yes, it's a diversity.
It's a diversity hire.
Hiring. Yeah, that's quite obvious.
Yeah.
But he might be good. So,
he might be good. It's the 4-episode rule. We have to wait for 4 episodes before I can say it gets assigned to the trash can.
We've talked about this before. Music is a character, and it's very important in Doctor Who.
The question is that it might not be that character. You might not get the cue, the music save the day anymore.
Then it's not Doctor Who. That is a kind of an essential part of Doctor Who.
I know. That's why I'm worried. Because the geezer doing the music is... I think you probably describe his music more as wallpaper than someone going, get excited, get fucking excited.
Yeah, but you see, towards the end of... I mean, certainly in the Capaldi era, it was less like that. And I think that's another reason why Murray Gold probably did leave. He didn't get really tested in the Capaldi era like he did in the previous things. I mean, I loved Murray Gold's music to Doctor Who, but those last few seasons, it wasn't anything inspiring. So we'll give this guy a chance.
The 12th Doctor's theme, the 12th Doctor's theme, Hello, Hello, I think they call it, that was a good thing. That was his cue, the music saved the day.
One
music.
And only theme throughout that really... It wasn't like the old music. The throughout the whole of sort of Tennant, Matt Smith, Eccleston, music was fun. It was less fun in the Capaldi era. The Capaldi era is always going to be one of those Marmite kind of eras of Doctor Who, I think.
I think when it hit it high, it hit it high well. And when it fell flat, it really fell flat. Yeah. There was no middle ground. There were no middling episodes. It was either really good or really shite.
Mm.
And that's annoying because Capaldi, I think, was probably the best actor to do Doctor Who. I think he was better than Christopher Eccleston. That's saying much because I've seen Christopher Eccleston act and in theatre, and he's fucking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you watched the trailer, Nige, and I mean, you thought it was pretty shit, didn't you?
Yep. Didn't get anything from it.
It did not excite you?
No, I didn't get anything from it.
No, I don't know who cut that, but they need to be taken outside and slapped.
Yeah. Do you know what? This is the thing.
What they should be doing at this moment, teaser trailers are meant to be short, sweet, punchy. You know?
Get you hooked.
All they showed was some wispy lights around people's heads. So literally all they've done is shown you who the companions are.
It was fucking lazy. They are
really, really shit.
Yeah.
It was lazy. They are relying on the fact that you're already excited.
See, this is the thing that gets me, is that I think that Doctor Who is going down Ghostbusters 2016 route.
No, please don't.
Yeah, if everyone watches that first episode, yeah, and they say Jodie Whittaker's fine, but the story was shit, yeah, which most people said, they'll ignore the fact that people said Jodie Whittaker is fine. And as I said, I'm less worried about her as the Doctor. I'm more worried about Chris Chibnall. And then they'll blame it on sexism, racism, misogyny, every fucking ism you can get in the book. And if they do that, Doctor Who, that's the day Doctor Who dies. The Daleks couldn't fucking kill him, but social justice warriors can.
Don't get me started.
And the worst thing is that Chris Chibnall, from interviews, because he's not come out and just made a few statements here and there and say, hey, we're going to do this, it's going to be good, trust me, just be a bit patient. Jodie Whittaker, see her in screen test, she's fucking amazing, yeah? And the other members of cast play off each other really, really well. And we've got a really good balance here. If they said that, then I would be like, okay. But they haven't, and that's worrying. And I know what happened. If it fails, it won't be blamed on the fact that it was shit ideologically driven choices that were made, rather than story, narrative, you know, exciting choices for us to watch as viewers. And they'll forget the fact that most Doctor Who fans are men of a certain age. And they'll make out, because they're chasing this mythical audience that doesn't exist.
Well, it's just the BBC trying to be... I have always been a staunch defender of the BBC, but even I am losing the will to live with it.
I'm done with it. I think it should turn into a corporation, and they should be a commercial entity all by themselves now. I think we should just keep the BBC World Service, and maybe if they can clean up the news division, the news.
That needs a lot of cleaning up.
It does need a lot of fucking cleaning up. It turns around and goes, your news has to be truthful and objective.
You need to watch the episode of Panorama on Trump the other day. Just, I know, you know what I'm like. I don't defend Trump in the slightest, but here I am, because it was so bad. It's become unbelievably lazy journalism.
Oh, it's the one with the...
And Panorama is their supposed leading program, and it was about as... Basically, they were talking about, just very briefly, they were talking about Trump and his attitude towards women, right? Which is fine, and it should be explored. But they basically implied that he went to this party, and they said, so there were some young girls there, and they were interviewing some Dolly Bird, and she went, yeah? And they went, so they were about 14 or 15. And she went, yeah. She said, did you ask him any of their age? No. But they looked 14 or 15. That's not factual news. No. That's conjecture at best. And that's not the job of a journalism.
The worst thing is, I do think Hollywood, like the fucking BBC, are full of fucking paedophiles.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised with things like fucking Corey Haim and that. But that's a story for...
We're getting political. We will be unpolitical now. But
it's a story for another day.
I will tell you this. Again, see if you can seek out the leaked footage, because... You won't be worried about Jodie Whittaker after that. She was good.
I don't think. I'll be honest with you. I watched her act with Christopher Eccleston, and they were doing some post World War II drama. I can't remember what it was. She was brilliant in it.
Yeah.
That made me stop worrying about her as the Doctor.
But you know, she had the twinkle in her eye. You know how I always bang on every time we get a new Doctor, they have to have the twinkle in their eye. She had that in that scene, though, and she was bubbly. And funny, the Asian girl that you see, the first one in that trailer, she's a copper.
Yeah.
And she's asking her why she's on this train, and they're on this blacked out train and everything. So, but she was instantly there. She was the doctor for me. I didn't see a woman. I saw the doctor. And it worked. And that's what she should do.
It takes a while for me to warm to a doctor. It's like Capaldi. It took me until...
It took me an entire fucking season.
It took me till Mummy on the Orient Express, I think, to warm to him. It was, for Matt Smith, it was, you're Scottish, fry me something.
Yeah, but that was the first episode.
Yeah, that was the first... That worked in the first episode. That's the first 15 minutes. David Tennant... was the bit where he throws a tangerine and he says, I'm not that kind of doctor. Yeah, and he kills the Sitarak leader. That's when he won me over.
Yeah.
And for Eccleston, it was in the second episode where him and Billy Piper are standing in the streets and he's explaining how time and everything runs.
That's the first episode.
That's the second episode.
No, the second episode.
No, it's from the space station. Yeah. Oh. And then at the end of the space station, because she's talking about the Earth being burnt away,
yeah.
And he explains that I can go back and visit these people. These people aren't dead to me. These people still exist. I can just pop into my time machine and go see them. Mm. And that's when he won me over.
Mm.
And it's those little bits where they win you over.
I'm pretty sure 90% having watched this clip. To me, that, as I said, and I'll reiterate it, that clip's done more to get me excited about this season than that piece of shit trailer did.
Yeah.
But anyway, there we go.
Okay.
I think I can wait until I can see a little bit more about it.
Yeah,
I'd like to see how she actually goes. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that clip that you're banging on about, Keith. But
I'll try and dig it out and send it to you.
Okay, all right. So let's stop talking about this, because what I want to do now, is I'm going to play you, for the listeners on the podcast, I'm going to play you a clip of Russell T Davies' first tease trailer. Yeah, and I'll put it in here.
You're going to see all sorts of things. Ghosts from the past. Aliens from the future. The day the Earth died in a ball of flame. It won't be quiet, it won't be safe, and it won't be calm. But I tell you what it will be.
Okay, so now you've heard that. Now listen to the tease from the Moffat era.
Who are you?
I'm the Doctor.
Doctor who?
Okay, now you've had that. And now listen to the tease from the Chris Chibnall Doctor.
It's a big occasion, but he's a big game player. You can see that from the confidence that he has on the ball. He's got a great moment.
The first touch was out with this ball.
Now, you can hear it in the audio very clearly which ones are the exciting ones to fucking watch.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah. I'm not... yeah.
I think you get what we're feeling.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I've been trying to talk to Nigel about The Expanse for ages. And I can't tell him anything, because if I tell him anything, it will spoil his viewing experience.
Boo-hoo, you suck.
It's very annoying.
Where are you with it? Where are
He's
you?
He's at the end of series two. I've finished the whole lot. I've got it on. He needed to bring a USB stick over so we could copy it across.
So he's done series two.
He has done series two. Yeah. He enjoyed series two.
And I've watched that mainly because it's on Netflix, and series three is not yet.
Series three won't be on Netflix.
September.
I've heard it's not.
No, September.
It's going to Amazon now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I heard that it was coming out in September, and it was going to be run for 3 months and then disappear.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
Right.
Either way, hopefully, when it comes out in the UK, I can watch it.
You'll get it on one of the platforms, because it'll be on Amazon as of next year anyway. So thank God.
Yes. It's going to be really weird, because it's going to be planet bound. They'll be on an alien world.
Amazon's got some really good shit at the moment. That new Marvel Cloak and Dagger series is quite.
I watched it and it didn't even get past episode one.
I'm enjoying it. I think it's quite good.
So I'll tell you what, guys. Are you going to talk about The Expanse now?
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to talk about The Expanse.
I might have to take my earphones out and you wave at me when you're finished talking, so I don't get it spoiled.
We're only going to talk about Baden's Gate. So that's episode 7 to 13.
Yes.
Okay. So wave at me when you're...
We'll wave at you. Sorry, Nige.
All right. I'll check you in a minute.
Okay.
Ready?
How fucking good was that?
The series final was awesome. I have got one fucking criticism of this.
What was the good criticism?
And it's not really a criticism, and I don't know if it was done intentionally. They should have split that series up and given us a gap between that final episode of What's Its Face and then moving to...
Given everything that happens in the book, yeah, they chopped that. I felt that they chopped that down the right way.
Oh, no, they did. But what I'm saying is you had that amazing sort of mid-season final. That the tension was there. It was amazing.
The end of the second
book. And then you get this sudden, very reset. Slow bit reset build-up. Now, it killed the flow of the series. So, to me, they should have done a season break. Done a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but given the fact that they were under the fucking gun for being...
Yeah, no.
They were trying to close the season off and say, look, if this is going to be the last one, everything is going to make sense. We're going to give you some answers.
I get that, but if they're going to do this again, now that it's on Amazon, they should do what Amazon did with the Tick, where they release half of it, give you a bit of a break, and then release it again. So that you get to refine it. You don't come off... Because you have to go back and watch that again. You come off the that hugely amazing episode straight into that. It's kind of a huge anticlimax, and you don't appreciate it because you're pumped up. And I've gone back and watched that latter part of the season again and loved it far more. And that season final was fucking epic.
Yes. Do not talk about the end because I want to save that.
No,
I want to save the ending for the end of this.
Yeah, but you see, again, that ending was purely for people that read the novels. That nobody will get what that was. Nobody will understand that. It's so fucking brief.
I have to try and check the books because I can't remember when that bit happened in the books. Yeah, I have to go back and check a Baden's Gate at the end to make sure that wasn't in there because that might have been in there. I might have missed it.
They've pissed through the whole of Baden's Gate.
Yeah, Baden's Gate in comparison to what it's like the what's it, the Caliban's War. They missed out the fact that they missed out a big war, a big fight between the Martians and the humans. They cut that out completely, which made sense for the TV because they kind of streamed it down, and plus it would probably wind up being really expensive CGI wise.
And the nuking of Earth doesn't happen in...
No, that happens in Nemesis games.
Yes,
and that's not a nuke; it's a rock painted with stealth material, so they can't see it. So they're literally spiraling these things up, but we get back to Abaddon's Gate. The opener with the fucking racer, that horrific fucking end as he explodes as he goes through the gate, dude. You watched that more than once,
yeah,
didn't you? Because
yeah,
you were like, "Fuck! did I actually watch?" As he fucking just liquefies forwards. And then gets caught into the slow zone as the station pulls it in. And then you had the Ashford character, who there's a character missing who's the engineer who had a broken and dodgy spine that couldn't be fixed and had mech legs.
Yeah.
Which Drummer replaced that character.
Yes, but Drummer's not really in Abaddon's Gate.
No, Drummer isn't. Drummer disappears until... the last book, actually,
yeah,
where her and Avasarala team up,
yeah,
where Avasarala is this really old lady eating pistachio nuts, swearing at people, pretending that she's gone senile, so people leave her alone. And it's like that sounds like something that character would do in old age. So they replaced Drummer's character with that one, and the kind of build up as everyone's going through. And she gives a really good speech to the thingy because it's our fucking, you know, this is our time, blah, 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 blah. That was a great speech. I can't fucking remember where it went. That was great as they go through it. And then the return of Miller, and he explains to him that the gate is kind of, has built a program based on Miller because he needs to investigate what's gone wrong. So it's not really Miller, it's the investigator. Even though you turn around and say, but is it Miller? And it's like, no, it's not Miller. It says it's been deleted 100-something times in order to get to where it is. In the story, it's different because they're doing work for Fred Johnson and he's appearing everywhere. And Naomi knows that that Holden is seeing Miller. But in this, it was like because they had separated, which made sense storyline-wise because of the shit that she did with the proto-molecule at the end of the first series, had kind of, sorry, Second series. It's called Friction between them.
Again, none of that in the books. The
no, no, she does it in the book too.
No, she doesn't.
Yes, she does. No, she does. She sends it there, but you know why? Because Marcus Inaros steals it and gives it to Winston Duarte.
That's not in Caliban's War. In Caliban's War.
No, she does in...
In Caliban's War, the friction between them is because Holden goes around killing people. And he's like...
That was the friction from Ganymede Station. That tallied.
Yeah.
Where he's going... And it's not the fact that he's going around killing people. It's the fact that he let Amos beat the shit out of the surveillance guy who was into the chicken. Yeah, and Amos really beat the shit out of him.
Yes.
And she goes, I understand it coming from him, but I don't understand it coming from you.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons that she got. And then she went on to the fucking Weeping Snambulous. Yeah.
Yes.
So, it's just weird because I've got bits of the book in my head and bits of the TV series, and they're both really fucking good.
Yeah, but the TV series is very different in many ways.
It's not. It does.
Aris Sevilla is very similar. In both.
Avasarilis, well, firstly, she's not Iranian, she's Indian.
Yes.
She's an Indian lady that was brought up in Denmark. And that's why her name's Christian Avasarila. Yes. So they've got that. The president, was it the president? Ehrenreich. I can't remember if the president or Ehrenreich's English. I've been living in Oxford.
No, Ehrenreich is English.
Is it Ehrenreich?
Yeah,
no, I don't
because
think
the president is Mexican. So the president is, because he has a name...
Sorrento.
Something like that. He has a name like that because I'm currently 3/4 of the way through Aberdeen's Gate.
Yeah.
And there's the vicar that is friends with him, and they keep talking to him, and he's got a Spanish name.
Yeah. So. But that character, I can't remember her name now. What is her name?
Oh, you're talking about the vicar, the female pastor.
Yeah,
in the book she's Russian.
Yes, she is Russian.
Yes.
Anastasia something. Yes. Or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, she is. And she's not. She doesn't live on Earth. She lives on Saturn.
One of the moons is
Saturn.
Yeah. Europa, isn't it?
I can't remember. Or was it Jupiter?
But her family moves back to Earth when she decides to go gallivanting off to the ring.
But anyway, getting back to that, the whole ring in the slow zone, because... When all get all the ships and they all burst through the slow zone to try and get like Holden and that lot, and then they realise that there's a speed limit in play because the physics of the slow zone says that the station at the centre controls everything, and the great thing is if you move the station at the centre, the gate just moves with it, so that thing can move through. So you can set it off in one direction, and the gate will always remain in the same position.
There's one thing that I very rarely will say this. I prefer how the TV series did. When they go initially into the gate, they don't know there's any other gates. In the books, they do, but they're closed.
Yes.
So they know there's other gates to other worlds. And I kind of like this, I knew they were there because I knew what was coming, but it was like, when are we going to get the reveal?
Yeah.
And I love that they did the reveal in the sort of... dream sequence-esque thing when he's in the space station. That was very nicely done.
The other thing too is the central station is big in really big in the book.
Yes.
It's tiny in this because of budgetary reasons. They can't fucking have like a whole underground cavern going on for miles. And there's like especially like pyramids and stuff in it. And they have like a robotic drone thing in there, which you kind of see briefly when the Martian throws his grenade.
Yes.
Which again was fantastic, and
the
I love
bit
the way
where the Martian gets fucking dissected.
It's taken apart and put back together so it could fit it into the hole that it destroyed. And the, when Bobby and that fire the bullets off, and it's like, you forgot there's a speed limit in play, because it changed the speed limit, and then Bobby figured it out. Because in the book, there's a note where he turns around and he encounters these Martian Marines, and he says, "I wish one of them was Bobby." And it's great because they went, oh, let's make it fucking Bobby. And I love the fact that they did that. That really kind of, you know, made it much, much more interesting. The fact that she was on the other side. Because she was like, kind of, she knows these people. And also it kind of makes sense why she now joins the crew. Because she joins the crew during the attack on Earth.
Yeah.
And the attack by the Free Navy in the books. But it kind of makes sense that she's seen the shit that's going on and seen the stuff that's been done that's wrong and she's got a script, she's got a moral sensibility like Holden, and she's probably closer to Holden's kind of morals than any other character.
Yeah.
And that's why she becomes captain in the end. And then she gives up and then joins and sits in the gunner's seat like she should do because she's a gunnery sergeant. And at the end, which is spoiler warning if you haven't seen it, sorry, which kind of made sense for that. And then you've got Amos. Amos wasn't too much. He didn't play a big part in this one as much as he did in the previous ones.
No, but there was two things that were quite interesting, and I think they've got to go with it. He attached himself to the pastor lady, the vicar lady, in that final episode quite a lot.
Yeah.
But there was no yet meeting between him and Julie Mao. Not Julie Mao, what's her face, Mao?
Clarissa Mao, yeah.
Clarissa Mao.
Oh, no, there was.
Yeah, but...
That was a great scene. It spoke volumes about Amos because it was like kind of, I should shoot her now. And she goes, you can't shoot her. He goes, yeah, you're right. I can rig up the auto doc to give her an overdose. She'll pass painlessly like that. It's like, no, you can't kill her. It's a great character because he doesn't know. He has no moral compass. He knows that he has no moral compass. And that made it, that's what makes it interesting is when you have things like that happening.
I am looking forward to season four because season four, they've got, I don't think they're going to go quite down the line of the books.
They have to go on the planet and they have to explore the leftover tech from...
But that's going to be cool.
The gate builders, I call them that.
That's going to be cool.
Yeah.
I loved how it ended. I loved the scene with... bit where he's going down to the space station in the spacesuit. The bit where he's just talking...
Yeah, Miller's just floating around.
But they don't show any movement, and that was really bad. It looked really bad.
I think it made sense because Miller's made a projection. Sense,
but it was the story. But it looked, there was no idea of motion.
Yeah,
so it looked like two guys hanging there on wires. It really bloody did. But I was engaged because of the conversation that they were having. But I like the bit where Miller is just floating above that sort of very flat water right at the end.
No, he's standing on it like he's walking on water, like Jesus Christ sort of.
But no, his feet are slightly hovering above it. It was very well done. And
you can't talk about that very, very
loosely. And very symbolic.
Yeah.
And
when he turns around and he says to him, he turns around and goes, I think that you were planning to open up the gates all along. And my worry is that I don't know where us as humanity fit into your plan.
Oh, that whole voiceover at the end, Holden's voiceover, brilliant. And very interesting. And I mean, I've read a load of... It's funny how this now has similarities between a book series that I was reading about a Terry Pratchett wrote a book series with another writer where they discover multiple Earths. And how humanity spreads out across these Earths and becomes slightly lawless again. It's very similar to what Firefly kind of touches upon, but never really goes into it. Yeah. And I like the fact that this is going down that direction now, because suddenly all these worlds have been opened up to humanity. How do you gain control on that? You know, the inner planets are not going to be able to control that. Where's it going? It's really interesting.
What are you
going
to do with the belters? Because they can't live in the gravity well. Yeah. I know what they do with them, and I know what happens with the other ones, and it's brilliant. So don't worry, it's got somewhere. Here's a funny. Here's a funny thing. Yeah, do you know why Expanse exists?
No, go on.
Remember the end of Mass Effect 3?
Yeah.
Remember how it was crap and everyone didn't like it?
Is that why they wrote?
Yeah. That's one of the main reasons that they sat down and wrote it. It was going to be an MMORPG.
Really?
Yeah. It was going to be an MMORPG, and it was all the fact that they turned around and went, the end of Mass Effect was shit. We can put it in. And they turned around and said, they planned out 9 books, so we've got 2 books left, and they've got an end for it. And they've thought it all through.
Good.
Which is good. Which I'm hoping that the end is going to be really good. I want to talk about the final scene.
It's a second. So, if you're listening to this and you've seen this and don't know what we're talking about, you've got to go back and watch this.
All right, okay. So, when Miller and Holden are talking and he says, I don't know what plans you've got for humanity, he goes, I also know that the gate builders are gone and something wiped them out.
Yeah, that's said more than once.
Hang on. And he goes, and something wiped them out. And I goes, I don't know where we fit in this. He goes, I'm going to need a spaceship. Yeah, because I'm going to need to travel. And to which Holden's like, okay. And then they start travelling back through the gate.
And there's that...
And hang on, no.
But there's a bit where they go... I'm not going to explain what happens, but I do like how the gate effect is inside the ship as they're going through it.
That's epic. Yeah. So there's like this weird ripple effect that goes through it, like the space is changing. And as it happens, Holden is looking straight forward and the ripple passes over his eyes and he sees something in between. Some kind of blue, glowy cloud
thing that flies at him.
To which everyone's like, what the fuck was that? Now, in the books, in one of the stories called Nemesis Games, a Martian ship passes through the gate, yeah? And as it passes through the gate, something in that space in between grabs hold of the entire ship and takes it apart on the molecular level. And it's only described as some dark force as a hand reaching out. And they kind of showed it. And I said to you, I hope to God that they fucking show that. And they fucking did. And I was so happy. I watched that scene about 20 fucking times.
It is pretty epic.
I was rewinding it. I was freezing it and zooming in and just seeing if I could see anything.
I think it's about to get a whole lot weirder now.
It's not going to get weirder. It's when you have Miller as a giant talking crab robot thing. It's going to be the weirdest thing. Okay. All right. Let's wave Nigel back in.
Let's bring back in the Nigel. Can he see us?
He can see us.
He's putting on his headphones.
Sorry.
He's coming back in. Say hello.
Hello. We've finished.
You finished ranting and raving.
We finished ranting and raving. I'm going to see if I can sit down with Keith and see if we can do an Expanse special and go 1, 2, 3 and do the first story for Leviathan Awakes, then the Caliban's War, and then Abaddon's Gate.
Yeah.
And I'll go back through the books at the same time and rewatch the series so I can get some decent notes with it. Just a quick one. Did you know the reason that The Expanse exists?
Somebody wrote a book?
No, they
what
didn't.
Do you mean the book exists?
Do you know why the book exists?
Because a couple of guys... Well, I think it's two guys, isn't it? They wrote the book... Maybe they wrote it because they were pissed off with how things currently go.
Yeah.
In science fiction.
Well, it was...
You're on the right track.
It's Mass Effect 3. They didn't like the end of Mass Effect 3, and that's what encouraged them to write it. And The Expanse was originally going to be an MMORPG.
I love the world they've created.
It is a great world.
It's very interesting.
Everything has a history.
Yeah.
Everything has a history. It's so detailed. Fabulous.
If you love the TV series, and don't get me wrong, there are elements of the TV series that I actually prefer, but the books are really good. And they are, so far, I mean, I'm on the third book and it's epic.
And as we say, if you don't want to read the book, fucking pick up Audible.
Audible, yeah.
And download from Audible. The guy, I can't remember his name, Jefferson something, he does fairly good narration, Nigel, on the book. All right.
So, seriously, mate, you should get into reading audiobooks. Just do a few voices. You'd be cool.
Seriously, man. You should
give it a try.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea, Nigel. If not, get a trial on Audible and get Abaddon's Gate or
Leviathan's Wakes.
Maybe you should start from Leviathan Awakes because there's things in Leviathan Awakes that wasn't covered in fact that Star Helix on Ceres had all their riot gear stolen.
My only criticism of all the books is Avacerula should be in every one of the books because I fucking love her.
Shit. What's Avacerula? The sweary old lady.
The sweary old lady that's in every episode of it's in almost all the TV episodes, but she's only...
The one I'm not so keen on.
You're like the second half of the third series because she's hardly in it. She's like she does a few statements.
I like her. I like her in the books because
she's a different character.
I don't mind her character. It's just her voice I can't stand.
I like her in the books because the books give her more. You see her heart in the first series. The first series of it gives her heart, but in the books, the book really does give her. You know, you like her. She's one of those people that she can swear like a trooper, but she can't offend you because you know she cares.
Yeah.
And the book does a very good job of explaining that. But anyway, we should move on. We're going to talk about Jurassic World.
Jurassic Pork. Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it.
I've not seen this one.
I've not seen it. Shall I step out now?
It's up to you, mate.
Dude, if you're it's not, really, it it's not really. It's not really spoiling it for you because it's kind of the Lost World.
Well, I heard this. Yeah, everyone's described it as the following. It's two films. Yeah,
it's the Lost World.
One is the rescue of the dinosaurs.
It's essentially right. Essentially, it's the Lost World with a better final act.
No, it's not, because it's the stupid girl lets all the dinosaurs go, because she's a clone, and apparently they're clones, even though they're not clones.
There's that, because, you know, there has to be a third film. So I didn't like it. I thought The Lost World was, considering how good the first Lost World was, and that was quite good, that was a really...
Hang on a second. This is something that I always find really irritating, yeah? My favourite character in the first Jurassic Park film, yeah, isn't Ian Malcolm. I don't think he did fuck all apart from.
But he's not in this film. Yeah, he's in it for about one minute.
Stop! This is not about. This is not about Fallen Kingdom. This is about fucking The Lost World. All right.
Yeah.
All right. If you'd have had Sam Neill in it as the dinosaur expert, it would have made more fucking sense.
Yeah, but they did that in the third one, and that wasn't very good either.
The reason they did it in the third one is because they figured out they should have had him in the second one. And all the third film was all the leftovers from all the films that you should have seen.
No. The third one has several scenes from the book, the first book.
Yeah, the cage with the fucking flying things in.
But this is, I liked the idea.
Quetzalcoatlus, or whatever it fucking is.
Quetzalcoatlus.
Thank you.
The Lost World was crap, but Jurassic World was a good film, and it set up something quite interesting, which they really didn't explore here. And we were told that that's what they were going. They were going to go down the InGen developing dinosaurs as a weapon, but they kind of touch upon it, but it was shit. And it could have been more interesting. You know, there were concepts there that were really, really good. Like the concepts of training velociraptors, and they didn't really explore that. And they just decided to go down with another Indo-dinosaur route that was a bit lame.
Didn't they call it the same name as the previous?
No, they called it an Indoraptor.
Indoraptor.
What was the first one called?
Indorex.
The I-Rex and the I-Raptor.
So yeah, we had an I-Rex and an I-Raptor.
Both by Apple.
And they're both shit.
It was.
And both cost 30% more than they're worth.
Yeah, you had the...
The
Asian dude with the turtleneck.
Oh, BD Wong. What is his name?
Henry Wu.
Henry Wu.
Yeah, you see, he was meant to play a big part in this film and he was in it for 5 seconds.
You barely saw him. You just saw him a little bit. He did the obligatory "everything's going to shit." I'm nicking all the samples and running again.
It was just really generic and
the thing. Hang on, pants. The thing about BD Wong, yeah, if you got him in the same room as George Takei, I think the universe would end. Given the campness that they both fucking extrude.
And seriously, you don't buy the fucking the volcano thing, because why would you spend all that money building a bloody theme park like that on a bloody island that is has the capacity to explode?
All right, but I said this to Gareth actually. I said to him, I couldn't understand the whole volcano thing. I reckon they've just made that up.
It was a MacGuffin. It was something they swam in there at the end to make it all make sense.
They said, they've basically gone, so how can we make film where we need to get the dinosaurs off the island
into a house.
Hang on, this was another question from the previous podcast, yeah? Because Nice turned around and said the US government were talking about dealing with the island, where it should have been the Costa Rican government, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he's absolutely right again. It should have been the Costa Rican government. It has nothing to do with it, although it's US owned. It was owned by a US firm. But it is the Costa Rican government that, in the books, deal with it.
I think what you should have had is you should have turned around and said, the US Navy are going to nuke it. Would have been a better one. The US Navy are going to nuke that island. You get the dinosaurs off, yeah, and everything, it gets turned to glass.
Keith.
That would have been a better threat.
Yeah, yeah. What? Go on.
Keith, in your extensive dinosaur knowledge, and obviously knowledge of how all things work... How in the fuck have the flying dinosaurs at this island never left the airspace of the island?
Well, I thought that, because I thought, you know, how it finishes with these dinosaurs flying around, you know, on the Hollywood sign. There's a deleted scene at the end, there was a post-credit scene with the dinosaurs. It's bollocks, because that was always the confusion at the very first Jurassic Park film. Because when you see those pelicans flying at the end, they look an awful lot like fucking flying dinosaurs. And you have to do a double take to realise that they're pelicans and not flying dinosaurs. In the books, the dinosaurs...
Weren't they in a big dome?
No, well, even if they get out in the books, but they die, or the book implies that some dinosaurs are living on the mainland.
They have, what they call it, that they have to get a certain enzyme.
An enzyme in their food. Although the book does imply, because the book starts with Gallimimus killing a baby in the beginning of the book, which is something he never explored in The Lost World, which is, again, he obviously had this idea which he never explored. He went down a different route with The Lost World and it was crap. The book's not so good either. But the first book explores the idea that the dinosaurs are escaping, and to quote Ian Malcolm, life finds a way.
Just a quick one. Yeah. If you've got a dinosaur, yeah, that's main flying ability comes from using geothermal currents to get lift.
Mm.
Yeah. If it flies out over the sea, it's going to turn around and head back.
I got a better theory. I reckon that the island has got those sentry guns from Aliens set up, right? And any time something crosses a fucking perimeter,
it would
disintegrate. That's what I'd
like
to think.
That would be much better.
Yeah, it would be cool, wouldn't it? No, it's not, but it's a cool idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I should have shown that.
No fucking idea, Nigel. Hollywood stupidness.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's
making
I think
shit my, up just to have a plot.
It wasn't good, this film. And it was a blatant response, a half-assed response to the fact that the last one made over $1 billion. This one just didn't have the story. It didn't have the hooks that the first one had. It was pants. I was not impressed with it. In fact, most of this, again, another summer of most of the blockbusters being... suck, and I'm going to miss out on the one that I really want to see because of the fucking lame ass Marvel thinking that they can release Ant-Man a month later in the UK because the internet doesn't exist and every entertainment site I go on doesn't spoil the fuck out of the film the minute you go on.
Yeah, Marvel,
I'm not avoiding the internet for a month so I don't get this film is going to be the worst taking of any Marvel film in the UK. It's just not going to do the takings that any other Marvel film does, and it's bollocks because people have had it spoiled, so they're just going to go, I'll wait for it to come out on DVD. I can't get to see it because it's been released in Thailand already and it's out of the cinemas by the time I get home, and it's not even coming out here until next month because of what? The World Cup. Oh, do me a favour. The World Cup was on for a couple of weeks. This is the excuse we're being given, right?
Oh, it's a month.
It should be this coming Friday.
Yeah.
The moment the World Cup's finished now, release it.
Yeah.
The World Cup finished today.
Yeah.
But it's not going to stop people going to the cinema. You should have seen how fucking packed Incredibles 2 was the other day. And that was at 8:30 at night. It was heaving. I mean, I have not seen a cinema that full.
Like
bollocks. Bollocks, 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 bollocks. Fuck you, Marvel. The internet exists. You can't do this anymore. You might have got away with this in the 80s when nobody from America spoke. You know, it cost a fortune to talk to somebody from America over the phone. So, you know, spoilers just didn't get. We live in a world where you literally can pick up a Skype and Skype somebody in LA and talk about the film. Films should be released everywhere simultaneously. The entertainment industry is just... It just wants to refuse the fact that the internet is thing. It's going to be the most pirated.
Keith, it fucks me off. It's a karma thing. Do you know why?
Why?
Because we've been getting the Marvel movies
a week before. But again, I've always said to you, that's not fair on the US.
I know it's not fair on the US, but...
They should be released simultaneously.
We had up all those weeks that we've had early, and that probably puts us level now.
But it's bollocks. Because, a week... Not that many spoilers get out. And most of the big entertainment sites are states-based. So Marvel have got an argument there that when it's the other way around, not as many spoilers get out. They don't. But this way around, all the big entertainment sites, all the big ones that we all read, they're all US-based. And of course, you go on Cinema Blend, even go on Digital Spy, which is UK-based, and they've just got spoiler after spoiler after spoiler. And you're like, okay, well, I know what happens in this film now.
Well, no, I know what happens at the end.
Yeah, so do I.
Hang on, guys. That's what happens at the end. Did you know something? He can't actually click his fingers in those gloves. Go and get yourself right, guys, I encourage you to do the following. Go out, buy yourself a medieval gauntlet and try and click your fingers in it.
But this is what they did. But this is why they do it with Game of Thrones. They simultaneously broadcast that worldwide. They did exactly the same with Westworld because of all the of the way Westworld is very similar with the spoiler things. And so the series final of that was broadcast within 24 hours everywhere in the world. This is how you have to do movies, especially Marvel movies, which have a huge geek and nerd following. And what do geeks and nerds do? They podcast about it on the internet.
Yes, Keith, they do, don't they?
Well, I'm a self-confessed geek and nerd, but you know what I mean. It just fucked me off. This has and I watched a football. Okay, there's a football match on one night. I won't go and see it that night. I'll go and see it the next night. Really isn't going to affect your takings that much.
So, how about Jurassic World, Keith?
It was shit. I'll give it 3 out of 10.
So apparently, it took at the box office $1.135 billion.
Has it done the billion? Has Fallen Kingdom done over a billion?
Is it Fallen Kingdom? So. Oh my god. Do you know what? That makes me really laugh because that's
shit.
Solo couldn't fucking do that.
Yeah, but Solo was done in by that awful Rian Johnson film.
Yeah, however, the Jurassic World before it was all right. Not brilliant, but it was all right and it had a fairly decent taking, didn't it?
It was over so, 2 billion in the end, wasn't it?
This is the follow up to that. So people are expecting.
Yeah, you see, I think Solo was dealt an unfair card. It should have been released at Christmas. It was dealt an unfair card.
Yeah, Solo should have been released Solo. I was a bit hit and miss with it. I would have preferred to see, taking away the improbable nature of the park being on a volcanic island anyway, I would have preferred to see a lot more of the film. I said it in the last podcast. I would have preferred to see a lot more at that location rather than seeing majority of it over back in America.
I would have changed it and turned around and said that the US Navy were going to do it and you could have had some tension between them and the Costa Rican government.
I would have done what they've always threatened to explore and just gone down dinosaurs as a weapon route. This whole haunted house.
This was fucking dinosaurs as a weapon route. This wasn't done very well.
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't.
What, Indoraptor with an infrared gun thing?
Yeah, it was just. It was pants. It was a half-assed attempt at it, and it didn't work. Not even Chris Pratt could save this movie.
Yeah, he was right in it as well.
Yeah, but he couldn't save it. He was the only watchable thing. No, the ending was pants.
The ending was nonsense.
The coned girl. Why do we need that? Did we need it? Did no.
Why did she have to be a clone?
It's a fucking dinosaur movie. We don't care about clone girls.
You're a clone. They are mutants. There's a difference. They're not clones. They're mutants. They've been designed to look like dinosaurs and behave like dinosaurs. But they're not fucking dinosaurs because there's not enough feathers on them.
Hang on, that was that when the first Jurassic World came out, Jurassic dinosaurs with feathers wasn't even a thought. This is a relatively new theory, and it was way after Jurassic Park came out, the first one.
And the other thing,
you look at walking with dinosaurs.
Raptors aren't they not raptors? They're fucking Dinosuchus or something.
Something like that. We've got to ask your mate.
Yeah,
he knows more about dinosaurs.
David.
Yes.
Yeah, Dave knows more about dinosaurs.
Dave Pratt. He's wrote a book about dinosaurs, by the way. Anyway, plug in. Enough plug.
Chris Pratt might not have been able to save that film, but Dave Pratt might have been.
That would be quite amusing.
Yeah.
Do you know what the funny thing is? Pratt in Spanish translates as Meadows. So Chris Meadows is his name.
In Spanish.
Yeah.
But anyway, you two, would you go and watch Westworld so we can have a fucking chat about that? I'm dying to talk to somebody about that because there is so many fucking reveals in it.
Just tell me quickly. Is Westworld series 2 as good as series 1?
I think it's better.
Better.
There's more.
They get their own minds, don't they?
There's more revelation in this. It's slower, but right. The ending is pretty cool. I don't think you can. They can do one more season out of this, and I think that's where they should leave it.
Yeah,
because
really
I think this is a three act thing. The first act was the build up. The second act is the sort of, you know, the destructions of the parks, if you like. The third act is the aftermath. So, but there's loads of little things in this that are pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. I want to see it. I did enjoy the first season.
There's a few more answers here, but you don't get them until right at the end. But there's a few things the first series didn't answer, and you never really noticed it until you watch the second series. The season final of the second series, you go, ah, yeah, I remember that. I didn't really kind of think about that, but fuck, yes, okay.
They didn't answer what was, you know, that bloke, the cowboy who was going around shooting all the people and shooting up.
Well, we knew who
he
was. They
didn't really answer what he was searching for and whether he found it.
Right, there's a lot more on for that. But again...
He died, didn't he?
Wow.
No, he got shot, he didn't die.
There is a Marvel-style post-credit scene at the end of the second series.
Right.
And
Thanos turns up, clicks his fingers, and wipes out half of them.
We don't know if that final scene... Because you know how they do all these time jumps.
Yeah.
That final scene could be the end of all of it. And all I'll tell you is it features the cowboy guy, or the older version of the guy that we see in the first... series.
You mean that actor that was in The Rock? I can't remember his fucking name now.
But so you've got Ed Harris, the old version.
Thank you.
Ed Harris is the old version of the guy that we see.
See, Ed Harris,
and the first series confirms that.
The funny thing is, Ed Harris is supposed to be the fucking Yul Brynner character from the original film.
Right, and he might still be, because that final scene implies something, and you're like, whoa. What the fuck? So, and we don't know if that is the ending to the whole thing, or it's some kind of prequel to it, or we don't know, right? But this second series explores something very different to what you think. It goes down a very different route to what you think, and that's why I think actually this has been really interesting and quite cool. So. You got to watch it. It's really good. It's genuinely better than the first season, in my opinion.
Okay, and I think that's just where we'll call it a day. So thank you for listening to Enter the Butthole. Thank you for listening to the Mucky Nut Punch podcast. We will catch you next week. Hopefully, we'll resume normal operations, which we've not been at for a good while.
Yep.
And hopefully everything will go back to the way it was.
Sorry I haven't been around for a while, guys. Had a bit of a family tragedy.
I was going to take the piss out of you. Fair enough. So it's a goodbye for me.
It's goodbye for me.
And for me.
We'll catch you in the next podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for downloading the Monkey Nut Punch podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Monkey Nut Punch. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Monkey Nut Punch.